Welcome to the New World. Episode 16, The Battle of Cajamarca. It had been 4 years since Francisco Pizarro had laid eyes on Peru. He'd spent the last year in Panama assembling his army, although army is a bit of a stretch. All he had with him were 180 men, 30 horses, and 3 ships to carry them on. Pizarro and the others were financing the expedition, but money was tight, so his intrepid conquistadors were forced to pay for their own equipment and passage over to Peru. Some of these conquistadors included his half-brothers, Hernando, Juan, Gonzalo, and Francisco Martin. All of these men were at least 20 years younger than the middle-aged Francisco, who was the illegitimate child of their father. Many of the other men came from their own hometown of Trujillo in Extremadura, recruited when Pizarro had visited after getting his governorship from the emperor. With preparations complete, there was very little else to do but get underway. On Christmas Day 1530, they set off for the port of Tumbes, the very same place they'd once visited on their previous trip. However, there was a strong wind blowing up from the south, so they were forced to land after only 13 days of travel at the Bay of San Marcos in modern-day Ecuador, around the extreme northern border of Tahuantinsuyo. After some trekking through the wilderness, the Spanish reached the town of Coaque on February 25th. The people of Coaque welcomed them with hospitality, but the conquistadors were not good guests. They pillaged the city, taking its gold, silver, and brilliant green emeralds, found only in the hills of Colombia. The reason for this was beyond simple greed. Pizarro immediately put some of the spoils on ships back up to Panama. He entrusted them to the care of Hernán Ponce de León, a relative of the more famous Ponce de León. Back in the Caribbean, Ponce de León would show off the shiny stuff they'd found in Peru and entice other conquistadors to join. The sight of easy money would draw soldiers to their cause like sharks to blood. While they waited for reinforcements to come, the Spanish stayed in Coaque for many months. The surviving native townspeople had quickly gotten tired of Europeans hanging around their homes and became refugees, heading off elsewhere. Hugh Thomas says that a disease quickly began to spread. Not among the local natives, as one might expect, but among the Spanish. It was apparently a disease called Peruvian warts, causing muscle and joint pain, followed by growths on the skin. Thomas says that the Spanish had no idea how to treat such a disease, and died in pretty surprisingly large numbers. Large numbers that were replaced when many more men showed up, eager to claim those treasures they'd seen for themselves. Still, Pizarro's numbers were at around 200 at most. It was a far cry from the 1,000 or so men Hernán Cortés had at his command in 1520. The Spanish went south, and it soon became clear that something was very wrong with the Inca Empire they'd once left behind. It was definitely obvious when they at last returned to Tumbes. Instead of a vibrant port city, they found a burnt-out ghost town, its walls destroyed and its many houses long abandoned. The civil war between Atahualpa and Huascar was in its final stages now, and much of the empire likely looked similar. As they moved even further down the coast, they were joined by a ship full of Spaniards under Hernando de Soto, the son-in-law of Pedro Rias, back up in Panama. Apparently, Pizarro had promised him governorship of the Inca capital, Cuzco, a place no European had even yet laid eyes on. By this time, the Incas were supposedly growing concerned with the growing numbers of European soldiers moving down their coast. They even took action against these foreigners, but the Spanish exacted violence in return. On one occasion, when Pizarro thought that the locals would attack him, he preemptively seized the leadership and burned them to death in front of their own people. Atahualpa had been informed of all this, but he was too busy with the civil war to take any action. Some of the natives the Spanish captured and interrogated apparently told them that Atahualpa was planning to kill them as soon as he could. Huascar may even have sent out messages to the Spanish begging for assistance. Whether this is true or not is irrelevant, really. The Spanish had a golden opportunity on their hands, just like they did with the Aztecs, a large empire, fractured and withered by years of tension, ready to come apart at the seams. Pizarro was going to exploit this, whether the emperor was friendly or not. For more weeks, the Spanish traveled further south, the Inca highways carrying them through the wake of destruction. On November 15, 1532, Pizarro's men finally marched through the mountains into the town of Cajamarca, where Atahualpa's victorious army encamped nearby. The Spanish, not wanting to appear unconfident in the face of such a large force, descended into the village near the tent city. Pizarro sent forth his brother Hernando and horsemen, remember, the Incas had never really seen horses, to go up and ride up to Atahualpa and demand that he come and speak with Pizarro. The Sapa Inca, sitting aloof among his soldiers, was frustrated by the seeming arrogance of the Spanish, especially considering that he had been receiving reports of their casual violence against his people. He also told them that one of his administrative officials had sent him an iron horse collar as proof that he had killed three Spaniards and one of their animals in retribution. Hernando also apparently reared his horse and charged at some of Atahualpa's guards, who ran away in fear. But despite the brazen nature of the Europeans, he couldn't just ignore them. So he agreed to come the next morning. Besides, he had tens of thousands of men around, and the Spanish only numbered 200. What could possibly go wrong? That night, there was a debate amongst the Spaniards as to what to do next. The emperor coming to speak with them in person was an opportunity they could not avoid. But attempting to more or less seize him, like Cortez had with Moctezuma, could go pretty badly. I mean, the guy did have an entire army with him. Pizarro decided it was best to more or less make an executive decision in the heat of the moment. Meanwhile, in the other camp, Atahualpa had his men who showed fear at the Spanish horses executed. Kim Macquarie, another one of my sources, says that he already had made up his mind when Hernando arrived. He was going to capture the Europeans, castrate them, and take their horses for breeding. Perhaps what happened the following day was an inevitability. Atahualpa delayed his arrival until the next afternoon. According to the Spanish, he was carried into Cajamarca's town square on a silver litter, covered in bejeweled garb with parrot feathers. Around him, there were many hundreds, or perhaps even thousands, of honor guards, carrying axes and slings, and dressed in outfits that the Spanish likened to chessboards. They carried the emperor's standard and coat of arms with them. If you believe this telling, then you might imagine that Atahualpa was trying to make a big first impression, just as Moctezuma had. Surely, at the sight of his wealth and power, Pizarro would know that the Sapa Inca was not to be messed with. A Dominican priest stepped forth from the Spanish and read the requirement to Atahualpa, which of course included the statement that basically all the lands belonged to Emperor Charles now, and that all of the people should become Christians immediately. Thomas included this quote from the priest. "If you obstinately seek to resist, you may rest assured that you and all your Indians will be destroyed by our arms, even as the Pharaoh of old and all his host perished in the Red Sea." Even Thomas, our Eurocentric historian, says that obviously Atahualpa would not understand a word of what he was saying, even if it were said in Quechua. As the Dominican was making his great speech telling the Incas to embrace Christ, he dropped his Bible. Atahualpa, who had never seen a European book before, had one of his servants pick it up so that he could inspect it. However, the Sapa Inca apparently couldn't manage to open the book, possibly because it was locked. In frustration, he threw the Bible on the ground. To the Incas, this was a harmless act, maybe a little rude, but to the Europeans, it looked a lot like Atahualpa was making a statement. He had heard the Dominican's words, taken his Bible, and thrown the word of the Lord on the ground as an insult to God and the emperor. This was the last straw. Pizarro's artillery captain, a Greek named Pedro de Candia, gave the signal, and the Spanish guns let loose. Cannons and arquebuses shot into the crowded and unprepared Inca honor guards. At once, armored conquistadors hidden inside the buildings nearby drew their swords and charged out. Knights on horseback, lances and sabers in hand, charged out as well, inspiring the same fear that Atahualpa had hoped to avoid. One of the biggest factors in warfare is morale. There are a million examples in history of military forces beating ones many times their size and strength, simply through scaring them into retreat. If the wind seems to be blowing the other way, even the most elite of troops will abandon the fight and retreat. Even a modern military today would break and run if they encountered weapons and vehicles they had never seen in action before. This is exactly what happened in Cajamarca. Though the Inca outnumbered the Spanish at least 2-1, the pure shock value of the guns and the horses of the Spaniards had its desired effect. Chaos ensued among the ranks of Atahualpa's guards, the Inca soldiers breaking and running, trying to get out of town and out of danger. Many of them were ridden down by the Spanish cavalry, who singled out the best-dressed ones to kill nobility. As for Atahualpa, the emperor was apparently wounded and captured by Francisco Pizarro himself, who hacked and slashed his way through the remaining guards to yank the Sapa Inca off his litter. He was now the prisoner of an illiterate bastard from Extremadura and his few companions. It was a rude awakening. That night, Atahualpa and Pizarro talked, and both of them quickly came to an agreement. Pizarro did not want to kill Atahualpa, and Atahualpa did not want to die. The emperor decided that it was best to just give the Spanish all the gold they needed, and told his army outside to stand down. In the morning, Hernando de Soto returned to the Inca camp and found it shockingly peaceful. The army, rather than attempt to rescue their emperor, obeyed the orders of their commander-in-chief and watched on as the conquistadors gleefully ransacked every last valuable object they could find. Only a few hours later, the Inca army received the order to disband and go home. Atahualpa watched as Pizarro's men snatched up his treasures, and suddenly he understood why they were here. These weren't soldiers here to conquer and stay. These were barbarian marauders, no different than the savages his father Huayna Capac had spent his entire life fighting. Surely once they had had their fill of Tawantinsuyu's riches, as much as they could carry anyway, they'd go back to wherever it was they came from. Unfortunately, he had misread Pizarro's intentions. He did not know that the Spanish weren't dazzled by the fancy trinkets of the Inca court, but that they could melt down those plates and goblets into valuable gold and silver ingots, each worth 10 times their yearly salary. Regardless, the emperor beckoned the conquistador leader into a large hall. He picked up a piece of chalk and drew a line high up on the wall, and said that Pizarro would get enough gold and silver to fill up the room to there. It was an offer that he could not refuse. To seal the deal, Atahualpa also had Huascar, his imprisoned brother, executed so that Pizarro could not receive an even better deal. The emperor sent messengers out across the empire with instructions to deliver gold, silver, and jewels to Cajamarca. Provincial officials sometimes set out and delivered them in person, calling on their emperor and carrying out the normal functions of Inca governance. The money poured in. Up to 30,000 pesos, that's 300 pounds of gold, were arriving in the Spanish camp per day. Since the Inca economy depended on useful goods like cotton and labor, they didn't miss it. By the time all of it had been delivered, the Spanish had over 1 million pesos worth of precious metals. For context, since their colonization by Columbus, the West Indies had only produced about a few hundred thousand in 40 years. When the treasure had been divided up into shares and the emperor had received his fifth of the haul, Pizarro and his men were some of the richest people in the Spanish Empire, with Francisco the richest of them all. All of that, and the Inca emperor was still in their pocket. It was easy. Too easy, in fact. Atahualpa had been waiting patiently for the barbarians to leave his land. But when all was said and done, Pizarro did not leave. Instead, he sent for Diego de Almagro to bring 153 men up from Panama and sent his brother Hernando back to Spain to report on their success and deliver Emperor Charles a share. The Sapa Inca realized with horror that he had misjudged the Spanish. They were here to stay. But rather than reacting with anger and schemes to oust the conquistadors, Atahualpa seems to have become depressed and resigned to his fate, far from the arrogant ruler he had been only 8 months before. The Spanish weren't so sure, though. It wasn't long after this that rumors began to swirl around Cajamarca that Atahualpa was planning to escape and link up with a loyal general to the north. Every source I've read said that this was nothing but a rumor. But it didn't stop Pizarro from being paranoid. Even with Almagro's reinforcements, the Spanish numbered just over 300. The shockingly effective ambush that they had sprung on Atahualpa would surely not work a second time. What if it was true? The captive emperor begged and pleaded with his hosts that surely it was not, but the rumors grew only stronger. They said that this general, Rumanavi, had 30,000 men, that he was going to attack at night, that his warriors ate human flesh in horrific rituals. Finally, things came to a head one night. A Spaniard burst in, claiming that his native servant had seen a massive army headed right their way. The expedition's leaders, previously undecided as to the emperor's fate, made up their minds. In their eyes, Atahualpa was a servant of Emperor Charles now, and by attempting to free himself or attack Pizarro's men, he was staging an uprising and guilty of treason. They decided to burn him at the stake, since he was a pagan. But upon learning this, Atahualpa asked to be baptized. After all, being incinerated would prevent his soul from passing on into the afterlife in Inca tradition. And so the great Sapa Inca, now a Christian, was strangled to death with a garrote. It was July 26th, 1533, and he was 31 years old. The attack that the Spanish had been anticipating never came. It soon became clear that the information they'd received was false, and that the Sapa Inca was dead for nothing but Spanish paranoia. They had spent 8 long months in the same town as Atahualpa, and they'd come to view him with some small amount of fondness, if nothing else than for his immense usefulness. When Pizarro and Hernando de Soto, previously in favor of keeping the emperor around alive, when they figured out that they'd essentially murdered him for nothing, they apparently were immensely regretful. De Soto, in particular, said that he'd wanted to take him back to Spain to meet Emperor Charles in person. When Charles learned of Atahualpa's execution, he wrote to Pizarro saying this: "We have been displeased by the death of Atahualpa, since he was a monarch, and particularly since it was done in the name of justice." End quote. There's more to this than just the Spanish feeling bad and guilty about it, though. To the Spanish, Atahualpa was a subject, but to the Incas, he was their supreme ruler, the man to which they all swore allegiance and followed unquestioningly. When he died, all the work he had done to reunite the empire since his father's death was undone once again. A new power vacuum was in place, and there was no clear successor. That meant that there was also no real way to predict how the men still in charge of Tahuantinsuyu's armies, which numbered still in the tens of thousands, were going to act upon the continued Spanish presence in their land. Maybe soon there really would be tens of thousands of angry Incas marching down into Cajamarca again. Rather than letting events play out themselves, Pizarro decided to act first. Capturing another Sapa Inca might be impossible now, but he could have the next best thing, the capital city of Cusco. The conquistadors strapped on their armor and saddled up their horses. It was time to march on Cusco. The time of peaceful rule through puppet emperors was over. The conquest of Peru had begun.